This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 26th of October 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 26th of October, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: fight will go on over farm plans, first look at city transport plans, and record-breaking heart survivor. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was, fight will go on over farm plans. A campaign group has vowed to keep up the fight after councillors approved plans to build a 32,000 hen egg production facility to the west of Winchester. Crabwood Action Group, CAG, has slammed the decision, questioning the process which led to the proposal being approved at last week's Winchester City Council Planning Committee. Last Thursday, councillors agreed with planning officers' recommendation to allow the development off Sarum Road, almost unanimously, with just one abstention. The decision on the scheme, submitted by Sam Burge, who runs Vale Farm in Sarum Road, means a 140-metre-long unit would be created on the land near the Crabwood Nature Reserve. It is planned that the facility, replacing Vale Farm's now-ceased six-year pig-rearing operation, will operate on a daily basis, with Mr. Burge saying plans will be put in place to stop smells and noise affecting residents. However, CAG have slammed the decision. A spokesman for the group told the Chronicle, "It seems that for whatever reason or reasons, Winchester City Council have placed the economic interests of one individual above that of the well-being of Winchester residents and the environment. The decision made by the Planning Committee is most definitely not in the public interest. Winchester residents and the local ecology will suffer as a result of the harmful emissions and reduced air quality that this development will bring. Animal welfare issues have also been ignored, as they are not seen to be a material planning consideration. It is our opinion that throughout the process, misleading, incorrect and incomplete information has been relied on and used in an inappropriate way. We believe the planning process has been deeply flawed in its implementation and is certainly not representative of genuine public concerns." The spokesman went on to say they would be pursuing this further, and felt let down by councillors and planning officers. The CAG spokesman also said, "We remain very supportive of British farming, but are certain that an intensive operation such as this should be placed in actual open countryside, well away from people, recreational areas and sensitive ecological sites. It seems incomprehensible that a generational farmer with a significant amount of land would want to place this in the midst of his local community, albeit not adjacent to his own property. However, Mr. Burge defended his plans, saying a lot of money and time had been put into researching the proposal. He said, "It's hard to call it misleading when I've invited the public to the site. I have been transparent." In response to claims of misleading information, he referred to images of lorries stuck in country lanes and chickens on the CAG Facebook page. He added, "We are pleased but not surprised the application was granted. I'm still happy to work with people." As previously reported, the scheme received nearly 160 letters of objection, with senders including Sparshell Parish Council, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, the Woodland Trust and the Campaign to Protect Rural England. Speaking in July, he told the Chronicle he had met with campaigners on numerous occasions, answering their questions and inviting them on site visits. He also stressed that the new facility would not be a chicken factory and that high welfare standards would be maintained. Mr. Burge added that concerns over smell and noise had been answered by the facts in the planning application, saying that residents would not be affected. Issues over the visual impact were also addressed, with Mr. Bird saying 1,200 trees will be planted to screen the site.
First look at city transport plans. One of the most important documents in recent Winchester history is due to be published within weeks. The draft movement strategy goes to open consultation in November. A long-term strategy designed to improve how people move around the city, whether by train, car, bike or on foot. The development of a strategy by the city and the county councils is timely given the new development in full swing, such as 20,000 homes, Barton Farm, also known as King's Barton, Station Approach and Central Winchester, Regeneration Project Silver Hill 2 and the 38 million Sports Centre Bar End, which goes before the Planning Committee next week. The aim is to understand how to address travel and transport constraints to support Winchester's growth and allow the city to become a healthier and more accessible place. The overall aim of the strategy is to reduce city centre traffic. Residents and businesses will be asked their views on the strategy next month, with the final strategy due by March 2019. Once adopted, further work will follow that will enable the two councils to seek the funding necessary to deliver infrastructure and wider improvements. A public consultation in autumn of 2017 attracted over 1,300 responses. The latest stakeholder event, held in July 2018, helped to identify some high-level options intended to enhance how the city works in transport terms. Councillor Jan Warwick, City Council portfolio holder for Environment, said, "This is an exciting and ambitious piece of work by both councils working together. We will take on board all feedback we have received and technical traffic modelling work before adopting a final version of the document in March 2019. Following this, we will need to develop an action plan, what to do first. Undertake further technical design work on the strategy elements and identify a joint funding strategy." Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council and City Council Deputy Leader, said, "As the city grows and evolves, we want to make sure we have an agreed strategy which is aimed at delivering the right travel and transport arrangements so Winchester continues to be a great place that it is. I'd like to thank everyone who has shared their views so far and look forward to further feedback this autumn, which will help the county councils to bid for national funding."
Record-breaking heart survivor. A man thought to be the longest surviving heart transplant patient in Hampshire, and possibly the world, has died aged 74. Harold Curley Kinsley, who had previously lived in Fromond Road, Wick, before moving to extra care accommodation, passed away surrounded by his family on October the 4th. His family told the Chronicle, "A lot of people knew him. He was quite a popular personality." They also described him as a bit of a character around Winchester, who would be remembered for his smiley face stickers. Speaking to the Chronicle in 2005, Mr. Kinsley said, "I have been very lucky." As previously reported, Mr. Kinsley had the life-saving operation in March 1983 after suffering agonising chest pains while clearing snow and ice at his Winchester home. He collapsed at a bus stop and was rushed to hospital for the six-hour operation. His new heart came from a 22-year-old Londoner killed in a car crash. At the time, the life expectancy of a heart transplant patient was 5 years, but Mr. Kinsley survived for more than 35 and a half years. According to the Guinness Book of Records, The longest surviving heart transplant patient had been American Ted Nowakowski, who survived for 34 years and 261 days. Following his operation, Mr. Kinsley lived life to the full, running the London Marathon at least twice and the Winchester 10-mile road race to raise money for Papworth and the British Heart Foundation. He also competed in the Transplant Games, a sporting tournament for transplant patients. Having survived such a massive operation inevitably changes your outlook, he said. It's got to change your attitude. If it didn't, I don't think you'd be human. When I first got done, I didn't take anything for granted. The longer you live with a transplant, you get so used to doing things, it doesn't matter anymore. Mr. Kinsley is survived by two sons and four grandchildren. And there's a photograph of a laughing, smiling, happy, late Mr. Kinsley, as no doubt many people will remember him.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements for this week. Alan, Josephine Allen, who died at Andover Nursing Home, aged 94. Curtis, Graham Barnard Curtis, died unexpectedly at home on the 11th of October, aged 68. Dodd, Carol Ann Dodd, who died on the 14th of October. Gerard, Maggie Gerard, died peacefully at home on the 12th of October, aged 83. Heathcote, Robin Heathcote, died peacefully on the 13th of October, aged 79. Hiorns, Eileen Hiorns, known as Nan, died peacefully at home on the 12th of October. Laming, Sydney James Laming, died on the 14th of October, aged 90. Ling, Barbara Ling, died peacefully on the 14th of October. Pritchard, Dorothy Pritchard, known as Dink, died on the 19th of October. Ward, Gordon Ward, died on the 19th of October, aged 85. And Wellesley Davis, Stuart Wellesley Davis, died on the 1st of October, aged 60. Now we have Christian comment, Albie, please.
Yes, Christian comment this week comes from Rosemary A. Baker under the heading St. Luke, Marriage of Art and Science. Last Thursday was St. Luke's Day, and his gospel will be the next one to focus on in the lectionary. He is my favourite gospel writer, and not just because he was a doctor. There are several things about his gospel which show him to be a man born out of due season. In other words, ahead of his time. With messages of huge significance today, right now. The first thing that made Luke significant now is that in him, the worlds of science and art meet as partners. He was both a medical doctor and a painter. He remains the patron saint of surgeons and artists. Too often, science and art are treated as alien to one another. It's sad when schoolchildren have to decide between science and art courses at a young age, and then the two begin to diverge, as if they can't live together. As if one, science, is about truth, and the other, art, is about fantasy. Both seek the truth and reveal hidden depths in different ways. They need each other, and we need them both, and we are part of a society which does not recognise that. Luke did, and in him the two lived happily. The second thing significant today about Luke is his attitude to women, certainly ahead of his time. Only in Luke do we have the story of Mary visiting her cousin Elizabeth, who was in childbirth. Only in Luke do we have the story of the woman who was a sinner. Only Luke tells of the woman of Nain, who was in great distress because her only son had died and she was a widow. Only Luke tells of the women of Jerusalem gathering on the way of the cross. In Luke, the birth narrative is seen from Mary's point of view. It has taken 2,000 years to follow the direction Luke was pointing, and it is still only a small part of the world and a small part of the church that has followed. The injustices to women all over the world should be a matter of great concern to us all, as they clearly were to Luke all those years ago. Many of our Christian denominations will still struggle to give women an equal role. Another significant fact about Luke's Gospel is that it is full of romance. We desperately need romance to balance our consumer-centred money-making culture of having plenty but wanting more. In Luke's Gospel, there is the poetry, the images, the colour that shows another way. It is only in Luke we have the poetry of the Magnificat and the Nunc Dimittis. It's Luke who gives us shepherds in the fields and angels in the heavens, because he recognised that ordinary words cannot express the inexpressible truth of divinity in human form. And so he turns to romantic tales to tell the revelation of the divine. He gives us the animal kingdom, bowing down while angels sing, to show the whole created awe in... to show the whole created order in awe. He proclaims the truth of the incarnation in romantic poetry, which has given birth to countless carols. People who know little of our faith know Luke's romantic way of telling of the search for God and his love. St. Luke, patron saint of doctors and artists, all seeking the truth, which is beautiful. St. Luke, who expresses God's determination that there be justice for women and for the poor and the marginalised. St. Luke, who inspired the carols we still sing, calling us to kneel in awe before the child who is God in Christ, born to reconcile the world.
Thank you, Albie. Now we're going to move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And, this one from Mike Caldwell, headed A Decent Man. Sir, Kim Gottlieb is a decent man. He's a kind man. He's a generous man. He cares deeply about Winchester, its heritage and its future. Were it not for Kim Gottlieb, this city would have been blighted for generations by an oversized monolithic development so completely inappropriate to Winchester's historic heart. This development would have caused serious harm to the cityscape, and also much destruction to, or complete loss of, the archaeological riches that lie beneath the Silver Hill area. And yet he has been the target of a bitter vendetta for 2.5 years, the aim of which was to silence him. This caused not only enormous amounts of stress, but also considerable personal financial cost. Name-calling has been frequent, and much of this has appeared in the cesspit that is the online comments forum of this newspaper. Such comments have included libelous remarks made by cowardly people who are incapable of putting their real names to their hateful words. Even your headline, Rebel Councillor Complaint Upheld, accompanying last week's article on this story, Chronicle October 18, is skewed and unfair. One petty complaint has been upheld. 5 of the 6 complaints have not. Kim Gottlieb is no rebel. He merely speaks his mind. He speaks for the 2,000 people who marched in protest nearly 4 years ago and who also demanded that heads should roll. Kim had the courage to say what many thought, and he exercised his right to freedom of speech. Winchester should be celebrating Kim Gottlieb, not punishing him. Those who should be held to account are the ones who brought about this farcical series of complaints against him in the first place. Moreover, the whole process has undoubtedly cost the taxpayer many, many thousands of pounds. Yes, Winchester does deserve better. And that from Mike Caldwell, Nuns Road, Hyde, Winchester.
No fun. Sir, as Halloween draws ever closer, may I, through your column, appeal to parents to make sure that they know where their children are and what they're getting up to on the evening of October the 31st. I would draw their attention to the fact that not everyone wants to participate in trick or treat. Last year we were targeted with eggs thrown at our house, not once but several times, and far from being an innocent prank, this causes a lot of damage as egg is hard to remove, and for us it resulted in having to repaint the front of our house. We had a polite notice on the door to indicate no trick or treat, and this was obviously taken as an affront by a group of youths who had clearly gone out prepared to cause damage. The police were called and did catch up with them, but it was not a pleasant experience, and consequently we are now apprehensive about the coming event. I would just add that after these lads had been visited by the police, we did receive a note of apology from one of them, and I was quite touched by that, as it went a little way to reaffirm my faith in humanity. But I would still have preferred not to have experienced the whole episode. And that's from Pauline Moore from Hyde. And there is a picture accompanying this letter, actually, of pumpkins cut out and a skull and lanterns.
And this letter comes from Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Winchester, under the heading Crystal Balls. Sir, we are entering the second industrial revolution with information from technology doubling every year and artificial intelligence already in action. Richard Sutherland, the new boss of Winchester Business Improvement District, is certainly, as he says, going to have a complicated time. None of us, he is quoted as saying, has a crystal ball to see what the future holds. Chronicle, October the 18th. I do not quite agree with that, but what is certain is this. With a thriving new university, an agricultural college, and innovative zoo that are nationally praised, a dynamic sixth-form college, two world-class independent schools and many excellent schools for younger pupils, and finally, the well-established headquarters of IBM in Hursley, our younger citizens in this city are well prepared for entering the future. What future? Is there not a crystal ball that we can see darkly through the chaos of Brexit negotiations and the popular denial of the information from experts? In my view, there is. But it gives us a certainty not untinged with apprehension. The recent unexpectedly authoritative report from the International Panel on Climate Change allows us 12 years to make fundamental adaptations to the way we live our lives. University towns are well suited to that situation. The blueprints for Winchester can be found in cities like Bath and Cambridge, rather than Basingstoke or Birmingham. Winchester must be an attractive place. Beautiful and interesting might be better words. To live and work in. With an emphasis on technical and social innovation encouraged by fine public spaces and ease of movement in a city centre that is not dominated by old-fashioned internal combustion engines. This is the sort of growth we need. Our population is already growing rapidly, but the vision of a Winchester adapting to the urgent demands of the next 12 years will obviously include within its wider understanding of growth natural growth of retail outlets. Winchester will not be allowed by its citizens and circumstances to wither on the vine.
And this from Phil Yates, headed The Return of the Water Fountain. Sir, the reference in the Chronicle, October 18, of the City Council's decision to bring back free water drinking fountains reminds me of a famous drinking fountain which stood in the middle of the road just above the Westgate. This was known as the Little Hales Memorial Drinking Fountain. As children, over 70 years ago, we drank from enamel cups chained to the structure. Hygiene was not a word common to us in those days. When plans were considered to build the new County Council offices in 1935, the whole of the upper part of the Westgate was demolished, including shops and public toilets, but the water fountain was saved and transferred all in one piece to the lower part of Oram's Arbour, where it still stands today. But of course, we cannot drink from it anymore. And it's a lovely photograph of the drinking fountain, and it's a beautiful bit of structure, and very good that someone's actually bothered to save it. Anyway, that's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
M.F. Hodder from Home Lanes, Barsholt, writes under the title Ignorant. Sir, two recent decisions by Winchester City Planning Committee have give rise for concern. The first is the anaerobic digester at Sparshot College. The second, the intensive egg farm north of Sarum Road near Winchester. Councillors on the committee appear to be willfully ignorant of the many technical and health issues advanced by those opposing both applications. Their complete disregard for those they represent is shocking. In addition, the planning officers in both cases appear to cherry-pick facts which support the arguments without mentioning the facts which might have proved unhelpful to the case they were making for consent. In both instances, the strong impression left afterwards that the decision to agree these applications had been made before any submissions had been made at the public hearings. In other words, it was predetermined. The repercussions of approving these applications are yet to be felt and may result in what could be described as environmental vandalism. The environment of Winchester should be protected and the people of Winchester deserve fair representation. Therefore, it would be in the public interest to hold an independent inquiry into the conduct of both applications. And as I said, that was from M.F. Hodder.
Sensitive Issues. A letter from Philip Morgan, Killam Lane, Tegdown, Winchester. Sir, it is unfortunate that Mr. Sutherland, in his haste to grow the city and put the past behind us and bring in more retail and more jobs, has trampled on sensitive issues. The city will not wither on the vine. Chronicle, October the 18th. Keeping the past in our minds, not putting it behind us, is the subtle key to the future of Winchester. This is the task the city has faced since maybe Tudor times, when conserving the best of the past maybe first started to be a major issue. Over the years, it has been handled well and badly. St. George's Street is a bad example. The county's 1960s-70s building, another. And the City Council's brutish new block in Chesil Street, another. But the Cathedral, the Guildhall, the first Stanmore Estate, and the College's new development at St. Swithin's are good examples. What we do not want is station approach looking like Croydon, nor do we want more empty shops in the High Street, because they've all moved to Silver Hill. Internet shopping has to develop further before we know what future retailing will look like. Mr. Sutherland's patience, not his haste, is needed here. He also wants to resolve a problem that, in my view, doesn't even exist. The high percentage of public sector jobs in the city. What's his problem here? And in any event, it will disappear naturally if we increase jobs because they will almost certainly be private sector jobs. Winchester must grow, or at least play its part in the growth in Hampshire. The country is desperately short of housing. It must go somewhere. If the population continues to grow, we need more jobs. We need jobs suitable for Winchester people, in high tech, but also less skilled jobs, so everybody can earn a living. Without that, the rich have to subsidise the unemployed. So, Mr. Sutherland, I'm glad you find being here a great learning experience, but your announcements reveal you indeed have lots to learn. I also enjoy learning. I look forward to learning from your views and experience.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we're going to move back in time and do some historical items. Nikki, 200 years ago, please.
October 26, 1818. On Thursday, the Hampshire Agricultural Society held their autumnal meeting at Winchester. The Open Committee for Auditing the Accounts and Managing the Affairs of the Society assembled at 12 o'clock, and after some hours spent transacting the business of the day, a most respectable party of gentlemen and agriculturalists sat down to an excellent dinner provided by Mr. Sturgis of the Sun Inn.
And 100 years ago, there are two items from October the 26th, 1918. The opening session in connection with the Winchester and Hampshire Scientific and Literary Society was held at the Guild Hall on Monday evening when the President, M.J. Rendell, occupied the chair and Mr. J. Benson spoke on the subject of Russia from within, his remarks being illustrated by a series of lantern slides. Owing to the indisposition, the Honorary Secretary, Mr. Norman Nesbitt, could not be present, and the minutes of the previous meeting were read by Mr. R. W. Hooley. The President, in introducing Mr. Benson, said the latter had lived for several years in Russia, and therefore he knew firsthand the conditions and home life of the Russian peasantry. Mr. Benson prefaced his references to the home life of the Russian folk by the observation that, so far from blaming the Russian people for dropping out of the war, they ought to be grateful to the people of that country for backing them up in the way that they had done. And the second item is, the annual Winchester October Sheep Fair was held at Bar End on Wednesday when Messrs. James Harris and Son submitted a catalogue of 6,500 sheep and over 350 head of cattle and also horses, etc. This entry was comparatively a good one, and there was a large and representative attendance at the fair. But trade was dragging all the way through, and for some lots, no bids were obtainable.
And now, 50 years ago, October the 26th, 1968. Winchester Guildhall was again crowded with Women's Institute members when on Tuesday the County Produce Rally was held. Hampshire's Produce Guild has some 3,100 members and is growing all the time, and a very high standard in the entries for the two competitions incorporated into the rally was evidence of the hard work and imaginative planning as well as the skill of the entrants. Lunch for two judges, the subject for the Hakon Cup competition, carried the challenging stipulation that the background decor should reflect the subject which the judges were judging. Local involvement in the crucial factor in urban archaeology, said Mr. Martin Biddle at a weekend conference in Winchester. The subject chosen for the conference was the crisis in urban archaeology, at which Mr. Biddle, director of the Winchester Archaeological Research Unit, again warned of the importance of excavating town sites before massive redevelopment took place. During the 2 days of the conference, students heard archaeologists from four different towns speak on conditions on their own sites in relation to the problem of urban archaeology. In the case of Winchester, Mr. Biddle demonstrated how they had been comparatively lucky in terms of cooperation and financial assistance from the local authorities. Mr. T.G. Hassell, director of the Oxford Excavations, told of the town's long tradition of archaeological research, but added that its many colleges effectively sealed evidence of much earlier tenements beneath them. Thus, there was only opportunity for small excavations. In King's Lynn, where Mr. Alan Carter and his staff of diggers were excavating the site of a number of medieval wharves, there was a shorter tradition of archaeological research than in Oxford, and many problems were still to be overcome.
And 25 years ago, on October the 22nd, 1993, there's two items. The opening of a new £400,000 youth centre at Stanmore, Winchester, was in the safe hands of Saints goalkeeper Tim Flowers. The formal ceremony on Monday marked the culmination of 3 years' fundraising work by the Stanmore community, assisted by grants from the county and city councils. The building will be known as the Carroll Youth Centre, after the late Amisha Carroll, who was awarded an MBE in 1982 for her enormous influence on local child welfare and her management of children's homes. She left a bequest of £10,000 under the auspices of St Luke's Church, which was used to financially kickstart the scheme into life. The local community raised a further £23,000. The building was completed in May this year and was occupied the following month. And the second item, Hampshire County Council's Planning Committee approved Winchester's Park and Ride scheme this week, the first of its kind in the county. The next step towards the project's completion is planning permission for two park and ride car parks at Barfield Close and St Catherine's View. This will now be sought by the council. The Bar End car parks have spaces for 350 cars and the scheme will involve a regular bus service to the city centre. A report from County Surveyor John Eakins says measures will be taken to ensure an efficient bus service from the car parks, including priority traffic signals in St George's Street and Middlebrook Street. If planning permission is granted, work on the £800,000 scheme will begin next spring and should be completed by the summer. Now we have a Chronicle editorial comment, please.
Which is headed Winchester at the crossroads, literally. Traffic has been a chronic problem in Winchester since the 1920s. Then it was the congestion caused by the growing number of newfangled automobiles trying to get through Winchester up and down the High Street. A police officer was daily stationed at the junction of the High Street and Southgate Street. The initial solution was the bypass, and for the next 50 years, the perceived answer was building more roads, and if buildings got in the way, knock them down. For the last 25 years, the authorities have followed a more enlightened policy of making traffic adapt to the city, and not vice versa. Now the city and county council stand at a metaphorical crossroads. With the Winchester movement strategy, they have to weigh in the balance the need, stroke desire, to keep the city moving, and yet the need, stroke desire, to reduce the impact of traffic. So more parking in the city centre or less? More park and ride? Or a greater commitment to public transport, walking and cycling? Modern traffic movement control could do away with much of the one-way system, potentially North Walls and Jewry Street, but will that simply suck in more traffic into the city centre? There are no easy answers, but the decisions that the councils will be making soon will affect Winchester in a less tangible but just as important way as decisions over developments such as the station approach.
Thank you. Now, Norma, we have first person, please.
And this is entitled Fraught Times at the Door by George Hayter. Are you all right with dogs? That is what many dog owners ask when they invite me into their home. I always lie. Yes, of course, I say, not wanting to upset them. Then their dog appears, usually bounding straight for me. He's quite harmless, the owner invariably says, as the lightning-fast ton of meat bears down on me. He's very friendly. With that, the excited beast launches itself into the air. Time goes into slow motion for the tenth of the second that the animal is mid-air glide, its limbs fully extended fore and aft. Then its front paws pound into my chest. It's quite all right, I find myself saying as I regain my balance and wipe the dog's saliva from my face. Like many men, I have found that after the head, the dog's follow-up target tends to be the crotch. I therefore crouch into a defensive stoop, tucking my elbows in front of my flies. At the same time, I try to distract the boisterous hound by surrendering one of my hands to its hyperactive tongue. I've no doubt that many dog lovers actually revel in being assaulted, licked and intimately nuzzled by someone else's dog. And I accept that the ordeal is largely my fault because I stupidly tell the dog owner that I'm all right with dogs. But there is a way that dog owners could assist gutless people like me who fail to speak their mind. They could change their questions so it includes 1, dog-specific information, and 2, clear options. Instead of plain, are you all right with dogs, a more helpful inquiry might run along the lines of, are you all right with a dog jumping on you, or would you prefer me to keep it in a separate room? Owners with time to spare might like to include additional data. Are you all right with uncontrolled dogs that frighten people? My dog might jump up and lick your face, he might spoil your clothes and prod his snout into your privates. I can't stop him. You will probably feel obliged to stroke him, so you will need to wash your hands. I fear for your safety. Do you want to risk indignity and injury, or would you like me to keep my dog away from you? Harrowing visits to the homes of dog owners are one of the reasons I'm not all that keen on dogs or their doting owners. So it may surprise you that I hold Hampshire's dog owners in high regard. With their downward reach and their little bags, they have earned my admiration by creating an environmental revolution. The profound change affected by them has been almost as liberating as the smoking ban or gay pride. What they have achieved is a particular boon for walkers, playful children and picnickers. If you're reading this while eating, you might stop here and finish the article after your meal. Their meticulous harvesting of their pets' excrement has improved my life and the lives of millions of others who like to get out and about. No animal waste is more repugnant than a dog's, yet they dutifully manipulate the malodorous material by hand. That is heroic. Their most universal adoption of picking up after their dogs has transformed Winchester's treacherous, faeces-infected pavements and parks of the 1970s to the mostly safe ground today. Walkers in Winchester and most other towns in Britain no longer have to keep their eyes on the ground. St Catherine's Hill and Oram's Arbour are minefields no longer. Thank you, dog owners. To mankind, you have given us back carefree wandering and clean souls. In a perfect world, diligent dog owners would receive greater public recognition. If there was a Nobel Prize for public service, I wouldn't object if Britain's dog owners won it one year.
Follow that. Yeah, follow that, are we? And now we've got Belgarum. So, 3 items, I think.
Yeah, 3 items from Belgarum's alternative look at the news. And the first comes under the heading, The Flood Zone of the City. And there's a photograph. It is a photograph of the most recent flood map in the City Council documents, which shows the Winchester city centre completely flooded by blue, and it looks alarming. This is the latest flood map for Winchester city centre. The map is included in the recently adopted Central Winchester Regeneration Supplementary Planning document. It shows the central area and the blue, which takes up most of the photograph, indicates which parts would be swamped in a flood expected once every 100 years. It includes most of the area, including the Brooks Centre, the bus station, and across the High Street and the Broadway. What needs to be remembered is that the city, the centre of Winchester City, if nature took its course, would be a marsh. First the Romans and then the Saxons controlled the water, and the flows are now embanked along the River Itchen and in three underground tunnels under Upper Brook Street, Middle Brook Street and Lower Brook Street. Since the most recent instance in the winter of 2013 to 2014, much has been done to alleviate the threat. It was a close shave in 2014 with the emergency flooding of the farmland near Easton, saving the city centre. The local authorities have spent money on installing flood barriers around St Bede School and School of Art. But whilst the flood zone is for one in a 100-year scenario, the SPD flood map caption does include the ominous phrase, plus climate change. Time will tell. Now the second item, weeds on walls. And there's a photograph which shows a medieval wall at the Weirs in Winchester with a young woman walking past it. And lots of weeds growing out of it. And it's about these weeds on walls that the article's about. These medieval walls stood up to sieges in civil wars, but they look like they're being slowly conquered by weeds, especially red valerian. The walls on the Weirs date back to the 12th or 13th centuries and would have seen action during those turbulent times. Arrows, rocks, or even cannonballs may have posed a short, sharp shock. But the ingress of roots poses a more long-term problem. English Heritage has in the past spent time and money clearing the vegetation, but Belgarum has not seen any remedial work on the walls for at least 10, if not 20 years. And the final item, a striking reminder. Striking reminders of the sacrifices made during World War I are appearing across the country. Tommy Silhouettes, funded by Test Valley Borough Council, have been erected in Stockbridge, Romsey and Andover. Few, if any, have been put up in the Winchester area, although Belgarum is happy to be put right. The statues resemble a soldier at war as part of the There But Not There nationwide campaign to represent those who have lost their lives during war. Silhouettes will be in place at remembrance events up and down the country for members of the public to pay their respects. Test Valley Borough Council, TVBC, has purchased three, with the one in Stockbridge at the old St Peter's Church. Leader of TVBC, Councillor Phil North, said, "We felt it was very important for these silhouettes to be situated in Test Valley as a reminder of just what sacrifices were made during World War I."
Thank you. Now we move on to the announcements, and we start with What's On. There's a concert on Tuesday the 30th of October at 7:30 p.m. in United Reformed Church in Romsey. The Michelmersh Silver Band presents 100, a concert commemorating centenaries of the RAF and of the Armistice. You can get tickets on the door or from the tourist office in Romsey, and the telephone number is 01794 512 987. And there's a couple of early reminders for festive events. The Christmas market starts only a couple of weeks away now, on Saturday the 17th of November. And just before that, on Thursday the 15th of November, the big switch-on of the Christmas lights takes place in the Broadway. The event starts at 4 p.m. and the lights actually get switched on at 6 p.m. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 26th of October at 7:47 a.m. and begins at 5:51 p.m. On Wednesday the 31st of October, it ends at 6:56 a.m. and begins at 4:41 p.m. And yes, that's not a mistake. I know there's an hour's difference because don't forget, this weekend, the clocks go back 1 hour on Saturday night. Now, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed, former child refugee to give a charity talk. My Journey to Safety as a Child Refugee is the title of a fundraising talk by published author Gulwali Pasale at Winchester Discovery Centre on Thursday, November the 1st, starting at 7:30 p.m. Gulwali was invited to speak by Southampton and Winchester Visitors Group, SWVG, a local charity which supports destitute refugees, including children, living in Hampshire. Gulwali was sent away from Afghanistan at the age of 12 by his mother to save his life after his father and grandfather were killed in a gun battle with the US Army. He made a 12-month trek across Europe, suffering hunger, making a terrifying journey across the Mediterranean in a tiny boat, and enduring a desolate month at Calais. He was smuggled into Britain in the back of a refrigerated lorry, speaking virtually no English. British authorities would not believe he was only 13 years of age. Eventually, he was fostered, sent to school, and won a place at Manchester University to study politics. Migration from Afghanistan to the UK began when political refugees fled the communist regime in the 1980s. Numbers skyrocketed after the Taliban came to power in 1996, and instability in the region continues to drive migration. Today, more than half the world's refugees are children. More than 1,000 men, women and children have drowned in the Mediterranean in 2018. Gulwali could so easily have lost his life too, but somehow he survived, achieving against all the odds. Gulwali, author of The Lightless Sky, gives a voice and a face to the refugee crisis. Hazel Still from SWVG said, "We are delighted Gulwali has accepted our invitation to speak. It should be a fascinating talk as he describes his journey to safety and new life here. Through his public speaking, Gulwali aims to help people understand the plight of refugees and asylum seekers. All profits from the talk will go to SWVG. Tickets from Winchester Box Office, £10 and £5 for students, www.hants.gov.uk/shop, and a telephone number as well, probably more useful, 01962 873 603. The SWVG was set up after asylum seekers were held at Winchester Prison pending a decision on their status. And there's a very nice picture of Gulwali with his glasses, short hair, tie, suit, and a modern, slightly very short beard.
Village Shopped on shortlist for Best in UK. A specialist card shop in Bishop's Waltham, which stocks a variety of greeting cards, gifts, balloons and party items, is on the shortlist of retailers to be named Britain's Best Small Shop of 2018. Established in 2011, Best Wishes of Bishop's Waltham has enjoyed rapid growth. It tries to support the community, demonstrated by its sponsorship of the local football team, card delivery service offered to nearby residents, and organising a nativity at the town's annual Christmas fair. Products are carefully selected and the shop is committed to delivering friendly and helpful service. The Best Small Shops competition, managed by the Independent Retailers Confederation, IRC, sponsored by Boost, the brand new loyalty gift and promotions app for independent retailers and their customers, celebrates the commitment and creativity of the independent retailers. The winner will be announced at the Houses of Parliament on November the 13th. And there's a very nice picture of Yvonne and Russell Payne in their shop with all the cards behind them.
OAP condemns pickpockets. A pensioner targeted by thieves in Winchester has branded the pickpockets as scumbags. The 75-year-old lost her purse containing around £140 in cash in the city centre between NatWest and Cook. She's warning others to beware in the run-up to Christmas that will see increased numbers of people in the high street area. I walk with a stick and also had it done to me in 2006. This last time was on Friday at 4 p.m. I can't say exactly where, as they were very quick about it. It is the nuisance of it more than anything. I want to warn people that the scumbags are about. People shouldn't carry any more money than they need to. I just feel sick that they focus on the elderly and infirm. The thieves attempted to use her credit card unsuccessfully in Debenhams and Santander, but not her contactless bank card.
Young and old enjoy music making at a city care home. Toddlers from Monkey Music Preschool joined residents at Winchester Care Home for an afternoon of reading, music and play. The 10 young children, accompanied by their parents and music teacher, took their regular class at Colton's Cares, Abbots Barton Residence in Worthy Road. At the time, they played instruments, sang, danced and read books with the residents. Fiona Pritchard, the music and arts partner for Colton Care, said, "Music creates a bond between people, whatever their age, and within minutes of taking up their instruments, the children and Abbots Barton residents were fully engaged with each other, singing, laughing and having a great time. The session was wonderful to watch, and we hope to repeat it again as soon as we can." Angie Coates, the founder of Monkey Music, also attended the class. After the music session, the children and their hosts had a tea party with a birthday cake to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the preschool. And there are just lovely photographs of all the children, who appear to be absolutely tiny, with the residents and the parents and the carers and all sorts of people. And there's a lot of happy smiling and a lovely elderly lady, shall I say, reading to a very young little child some storybook.
Council objection over runway expansion plan. Councillors in Twyford have said they are opposed to expansion plans at Southampton Airport that could double the number of passengers over the next decade. It comes after the proposal met with mixed reviews from locals who took the chance to see them at the public meeting. Residents shared concerns over the noise and air pollution as well as falling property values after the proposal to extend its runway went on display at Bitton Park School. As previously reported, buses are looking into double its passenger numbers over the next decade and create 500 new jobs by extending the northern end of the runway around 170 metres. Now Twyford Parish Council has objected to the draft master plan 2037 document, telling villagers in a newsletter, "The village of Twyford is 8 miles from Southampton Airport and sits directly under the flight path as planes land or take off. The residents of Twyford are already subjected to noise, pollution and additional traffic generated from the existing airport. Expanding the airport exacerbates the problem and is detrimental to the quality of life in the village. No further intensification of the current use of the airport should take place, and steps to reduce the current levels of noise and disturbance should be a priority." Neil Garwood, Managing Director of the airport, has previously said, "I have met with dozens of business leaders, councillors, MPs and hundreds of passengers, and the common message was that they wanted the airport to extend its route network. The public consultation on the plans closes on Tuesday, October the 30th.
Doing the monster dash for charity. Usually, you want to run in the opposite direction. But this weekend, Charity Wessex Cancer Trust is asking people to head down to Winchester to raise money in their 3-kilometre Halloween-themed Monster Dash. The event will take place at North Walls Recreation Ground on Sunday. The fiendish course is made up of 10 giant inflatables, including the crazy tunnels, the squeeze and the jungle. And the charity wants you to compete in it in fancy dress. Entry to the event costs £12 for children, £19 for adults and £49 for a family of four. All come with a sponsorship target of £50, with all money raised going to help provide practical and emotional support to people living with cancer in Hampshire, Wiltshire, Dorset and the Isle of Wight. Those who complete the course will earn themselves a spooky medal, and those in the most spectacular fancy dress will earn themselves a prize. Rachel Coombs, event manager at Wessex Cancer Trust, said, "Over 400 people swooped in for our 2017 Monster Dash, and we'd love to see even more ghoulish girls and ghastly guys get into the spirit of Halloween this year and raise as much money as possible to help local families living with cancer. Visit www.wessexcancer.org.uk. That's www.wessexcancer.org.uk.
County says fees will help keep tips open. A new charge is to be introduced at tips across the county, billing those who do not live in Hampshire to dump waste at facilities. For the first time, surveillance technology will be used to police the issue. Non-county residents will pay £5 each time they use the region's 24 sites, such as Bar End in Winchester and Prospect Road in Alresford, as Hampshire County Council looks to balance the books because the cost of managing household waste continues to rise. Civic chiefs estimate that it costs the council £500,000 each year to process waste brought in by non-residents, and these charges will help keep open the tips under threat of closure last year. Among those earmarked for closures was Alresford, and opening hours at others were curtailed. As part of the new proposals due to be given the go-ahead on Monday, October the 29th, automatic number plate recognition, ANPR, barrier systems will be used, only allowing free access for vehicles registered to Hampshire addresses. When a vehicle comes into a centre that isn't on the list, it will be flagged to site staff who will ask for the charge. This comes just over a year after other charges to dispose of non-household waste were introduced at the centres, some of which had opening hours slashed to prevent closures. The new charge will come in from April 1, 2019. County Councillor Rob Humby, the authority's Environment and Transport Chief, said, "I want to be fair to Hampshire's council taxpayers, which is why we are looking for the potential of non-Hampshire residents contributing to the cost of this service. HWRCs are the most effective and efficient and cost-effective way of recycling, and it's important that we do everything we can to maintain our network of sites." The council adds that, depending on their locations, some HWRCs have significant use by non-Hampshire residents, with nearly 60% of visitors to the Summerley Tip near Ringwood and over 40% of visitors to the Aldershot Centre in the northeast of Hampshire from outside the county. However, not all agree with the new fee. County Councillor for Rumsey, Mark Cooper, who fought for the retention of the Bunny Lane site on the outskirts of the town, said, "This is problematic, as £5 is a significant amount and patently designed to discourage cross-county boundary waste disposal. Presently, a number of Hampshire residents living near the county boundary will use HWRCs in neighbouring authorities. Those authorities will respond in kind. That means residents may have to travel further to use their own currently free HWRC. Longer journeys means more fuel use and more greenhouse gas generation, which will partly offset the benefit of recycling. It remains to be seen whether fly tipping will also increase as a result. As well as this new out-of-county charge, the authority is also proposing a £15 administration fee for van and trailer permits. This bill, Civic Chief says, will cover the cost of providing the permit to allow 12 visits within a 12-month period. This will be available to Hampshire residents only. Commercial vehicles from anywhere can continue to use Hampshire HWRCs on a chargeable basis.
Marwellius news for species. Yes, you did hear right, Marwellius. Staff at Marwell Zoo have welcomed the birth of the second endangered zebra in as many weeks. The unnamed Hartman's Mountain Zebra, which was born on Sunday to first-time mother Dorota, is the first of the vulnerable species to be born at the zoo since August 1997, and the first since a foal was tragically lost in 2014. It follows the birth of an endangered grevy zebra earlier this month. Tanya Langenhorst, a conservation biologist at the zoo, said, "Our latest arrival is a welcome addition as it's been a long stretch at Marwell without Hartman's zebra foals. Dorota came to us from Zoo Utsi in the Czech Republic and is genetically very important. This foal is her first and it's great to see them both doing so well." Marwell manages the European Ex Situ Programme, EEP, for the Hartman's Mountain Zebra, which are mainly found in Namibia and also Angola and South Africa. The wild Hartman's Mountain Zebra population suffered a dramatic loss in the early 1980s due to extreme droughts. While the species has recovered to more than 30,000 individuals since then, an event similar to the one in 1980s is increasingly likely under climate change. This could wipe out more than 30% of the wild population, making the zoo's population an important backup for the conservation of the species. In 2016, Marwell hosted a zany zebra trail to support the endangered species of zebra. And there are four lovely pictures. One of them is very much an R picture. It's the newborn Hartman's Mountain foal, born at Marwell Zoo, standing close to its mum. She's grazing and this little soul is looking out at the camera, looking quite bewildered, actually. Well, I should think he will be. And there are another pictures of the new grevy's zebra. It's quite hard to see because with all the stripes, it sort of blends into the ground. And there's also the picture of the zebra that they was painted. I expect you saw or heard about them. And it's put in with all the other zebras and they're sort of looking at it and stuff, say, "That's a brightly coloured zebra. What's it doing here?" But it's very much an R picture.
Aww. Hundreds missing out on vital MMR jabs. Hundreds of five-year-olds in Hampshire have not been protected against highly contagious diseases, it has been revealed. Latest Public Health England figures for 2017-2018 show 87.9% of five-year-olds in the county had received both MMR jabs before their fifth birthday. This means that 1,372 five-year-olds in the area are unprotected. The target set by the World Health Organization is 95% coverage. Of the 16,857 five-year-olds in Hampshire, 15,485 had their first MMR jab and 14,813 had both jabs. That means that in addition to those with no protection, 672 children will only be partially protected. Of the 3,297 5-year-olds in Southampton, 3,203 had the first MMR jab, and 3,035 had both jabs, leaving 168 children only partially protected. 1 in 10 children will not be protected against measles after the first dose alone. After the second, that falls to 1 in 100. Experts have said that the uptake of the jab across England, where 87.2% of 5-year-olds have had both jabs, is worryingly low. The MMR jab is a 3-in-1 vaccine for measles, mumps and rubella. It is given to young children in 2 doses, the first at 12 months and the second around 3 years. The Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health and the British Society for Immunology are concerned about children getting the first jab, but not the second. Immunisation efforts were hit around 20 years ago by a scare that the jabs caused autism, a claim that has been proved to be groundless. BSI Chief Executive Dr. Doug Brown said, 1 in 10 people unprotected simply just isn't good enough. This year, there have already been 876 confirmed cases of measles in England, more than 3 times the number recorded in the whole of 2017. Although measles is now more common in teenagers and young adults, Dr. Brown said that it was more important than ever to make sure young children were fully protected. He said that reduced uptake rates were disappointing. If we are in a position of increased outbreaks, low immunisation is even more worrying, he said. Dr. Brown added, vaccination is one of the few miracles of modern medicine. It's one of the safest and most cost-effective methods we have to prevent the spread of disease. The Royal College's immunisation expert, Dr. David Elliman, said that a lack of awareness around the importance of getting both jabs, rather than a decision by the parents, could be causing children to miss the second dose.
Thrushes, winter visits and some familiar faces. Heading, blackbirds. The melodious blackbird is a common sight across the UK and one of our most familiar thrushes. Their jet black plumage and striking orange bill make the males of the species instantly recognisable, and their rich, dulcet song brings joy to birdwatchers and lay people alike. You may have noticed that they seem to multiply in the winter months. As the days draw in and the temperature drops, blackbirds from Scandinavia and the Baltics join our resident birds to enjoy the milder climes of Britain. Food can be hard to come by in their chilly homelands. Another heading, redwings. A tiny population of redwings breed in the UK, but most come from Iceland and Scandinavia in the winter to feast on berry-laden bushes in hedgerows, orchards, parks and gardens. Redwings migrate here at night. On clear evenings, listen out for their tsee call overhead. They can often be spotted in flocks with field fares, moving from bush to bush looking for food. If you're hoping to see redwings, apples and berry-producing bushes like hawthorn may attract them into your garden. Field fare. Field fares are large, colourful thrushes that arrive in the UK in mid-October to take advantage of the rich autumn bounty. They can be identified by their blue-grey head, pale grey rump, red-brown wings, black tail and the yellow ochre wash across their chest. If you're lucky, you may see flocks of more than 200 birds roaming through the countryside. Song thrush. The song thrush has a brown back with a white belly covered in black, drop-shaped spots. This bird is a familiar garden visitor that has a beautiful and loud song. Earthworms make up a large part of their diet, but when the ground becomes too hard to get at them, song thrushes will eat snails instead. Mistle thrush. The mistle thrush likely got its name from its love of mistletoe. It will defend a berry-laden tree with extreme ferocity. In turn, it helps mistletoe to thrive by accidentally planting its seeds while wiping its beak on the tree bark to remove the sticky residue, as well as dispersing the seeds in its droppings. It is larger and paler than the song thrush, standing upright and bold. Nature notes, in the coming months, government will draft a new environment bill. It is so important these new laws don't just slow the decline of the natural world, but reverse it. Together with other organisations in the Greener UK Coalition, we are calling for the bill to set out clear targets for nature's recovery and for the creation of a strong and independent watchdog. We would love everyone with a passion for wildlife to meet their MP to let them know how important it is that Parliament gets the Environment Bill right.
Uncovering Roman Mian Valley. A group of students and amateur archaeologists have announced a series of discoveries at a site of Roman settlement in Hampshire. Excavations led by Winchester University Professor Tony King began at the site in Exton in Mian Valley after a rare Roman temple was discovered in 2015, writes Arthur Scott Geddes. The temple was first uncovered during a dig led by Winchester University archaeologist Dr. Nick Studley using a geophysical surveying equipment supplied by Historic England. The temple is one of only two known examples in the UK to have been built in a hexagonal plan. The most significant find of this year came on the very last day of the dig when archaeologist Joan Terry uncovered the skull of a horse. Further excavation revealed the complete skeleton of a mare and foal, believed to date back to the Iron Age, found buried beneath the centre of the temple's hexagonal foundations. Professor King, leading the dig, called the discovery an extraordinary find. It raises all sorts of questions about relationships between the Iron Age people and the colonising Romans. What is certain is that this spot has been a shrine for several centuries with suggestions of a fertility theme across at least two of the cultures, he added. The temple has been at the centre of excavation work through 2017 and 2018. The discovery of artefacts and a series of connected rooms believed to be a bathhouse with an elaborate plasterwork depicting a female figure have convinced the team of its religious purpose. Excavations this year also focused on two nearby barrows discovered by the Mian Valley Archaeology and Heritage Group. One is now believed to be an Iron Age ring ditch dating from about 1500 BC. Another older barrow is believed to be Neolithic, dating back to about 3500 BC. A further Iron Age ditch was excavated by volunteers in 2017, uncovering an ancient pottery, including one almost intact vessel. A sizeable Roman settlement is emerging in the Mian Valley, centred on a large building first excavated by Professor King in 1985, part of which is now on display in the British Museum. Survey work by the MVAHG last year revealed the foundations of a large rectangular building and led to the discovery of several Roman coins. The building is thought to be a villa. And there are pictures of the excavation site. And actually, one, Joan Terry and Alison Smalley finding the horse. And it really is very well defined. It's quite extraordinary.
Pop-up crossing in Drive for Change. Residents of a road in Winchester will erect a temporary zebra crossing at the end of the month to draw attention to pedestrian safety. People who live on Worthy Road will set up the crossing at the corner of their street and Stoke Road at 11 a.m. on Monday, October the 29th. This is part of a residential campaign that is calling on the Hampshire County Council to install zebra crossings and other traffic calming measures on the corners of Worthy Road. Residents have invited local councillors and road authorities to the event, where they will be on hand to discuss concerns and possible solutions. Since the start of the five-year campaign, safety measures along Worthy Road have remained the same, despite nearly 1,000 people signing a petition to support the changes. It is the only primary feeder road into Winchester city centre without a pedestrian crossing, and is a main route for children walking to St Bede Church of England Primary School, attended by more than 450 children. Head teacher of the school, Sarah Duck, said, "We have a lot of pupils aged 4 to 11 who cross Worthy Road each morning and afternoon. At the school, we teach road safety, have pupils who are junior road safety officers, and promote children walking, scooting and cycling to school. It would give further peace of mind if pedestrian safety could be improved along the roads feeding into the school as an extra measure to keep our pupils safe." Lucy McCoughlin, a mother of three children, who has been leading various initiatives within the campaign, said, "We feel very frustrated and we are fed up with all the excuses we have heard over the years. Why do we have to wait for an accident to happen before something gets done? We know the funds are available from the new King Spartan development, so money is not an excuse this time. Common sense has to prevail here." Ben Duxbury, father of two, was able to get support from Hampshire County Council to conduct a four-day study of road and pedestrian flows. However, this coincided with roadworks on the Arthur Road intersection that changed traffic and pedestrian conditions from the normal daily flow. Ben said, "It is disappointing that Hampshire County Council is not willing to take action for the safety of local residents, including the many children, elderly and disabled residents who cross Worthy Road daily."
Dogs again. Warning to dog owners out in the countryside. Residents are urged to keep full control of their dogs in the countryside. Hampshire Police's County Watch team has launched a message to dog owners to educate them about the risk of attacks in livestock. Residents are urged to keep their dogs on a lead when in an area with livestock and to be vigilant if there are no livestock visible. Police staff investigator Melody Manning said the worrying of livestock by dogs is a criminal offence. "We would like to remind dog owners of the importance of being in full control when in the countryside and around livestock and wild animals. If an animal is injured or dies as a result of a dog attack, the animal's owner has the right to seek compensation. This can include the cost of the animal, vet bills, and the cost of removing and destroying it."
Pupils donate food to Winchester Night Shelter. Children at Sherborne House School in Chandler's Ford have donated their 2018 Harvest Festival food collection to Winchester Church's Night Shelter. Pupils aged 3 to 11 at the school, from school's pre-reception to year 6, all brought in a number of dry, tinned and long-life goods, foods from home to donate to the shelter. The shelter offers accommodation and food all year round to support those in need of a safe temporary home. The hundreds of donations from pupils up and down the school were taken by the four senior prefects and the deputy head, Mr. Bennett, to Winchester Night Shelter. A member of Winchester Church's Night Shelter showed the senior prefects round and gave them further insight into the work and support which takes place there. Head teacher Heather Hobson Hill said, "We are delighted with the generous donations from all our pupils and parents for such a worthwhile cause. At Sherborne House, we organise several charity events every year, and we always have a great support from our children and families. We would like to thank Jeff from Winchester Church's Night Shelter for joining us." And there are a picture of the two boys and two girls and I think it must have been Mr. Bennett at the Night Shelter with all the food on trestle tables behind them. Well done, them.
Parents fined over truanting. Two parents who failed to make sure their child attended secondary school have been fined more than £1,000. The man and woman, who cannot be named for legal reasons, failed to make their child attend Perrins School in Alresford between March the 13th and March the 21st this year. Neither was at Basingstoke Magistrates Court, and the case was proved in their absence. Magistrates fined each £440 with a £44 victim surcharge and £200 costs. The case was brought by Hampshire County Council.
Campaign to stop child sex abuse. New figures show that sexual offences against under-18s rose by almost a fifth in 12 months. Statistics show that Hampshire Constabulary recorded 2,634 sexual offences against under-18s in 2016-17, up from 2,134 in 2015-16. Across the UK, there was a rise of 13% in sex offences against 4 to 8-year-olds. Now charity leaders want to help parents and carers talk to young children about how to stay safe from sexual abuse. The NSPCC has relaunched PANTS, PANTS, a campaign aimed at helping parents talk to youngsters about sexual abuse. PANTS Talks helps parents with children aged 8 and under have the vital conversation about staying safe by teaching them important messages such as privates are private. The charity says that their research found many parents were worried that talking to their young children about sexual abuse would be scary and confusing for them. To combat the issue, the NSPCC created a catchy song and activity pack with cartoon dinosaur, Pantosaurus, which don't mention the word sex or abuse, so it is easier for parents to tackle the sensitive subject. The charity also produced a video which shows other young children using the PANTS activities.
Quiz night for Home Start Charity. The number 13 is unlucky for some, but not for this. Table 13 at an annual quiz night. The Home Start Winchester and District annual quiz, held at Itchen Abbey's Village Hall, supports the charity with money raised going to train volunteers who befriend vulnerable and struggling families. This year's quiz was a little different, with organisers choosing to name the teams by table number and not by name. The winners, table 13, took home bottles of champagne presented to them by father and son, John and Jonathan Poulter, partners at Rathbones, the sponsors. Liz Cooper, the chairman of Home Start Winchester and District, said, "Our quiz night has become a popular event for many people. We all enjoyed a delicious hot supper as well as huge entertainment as we pondered the answers. More seriously, as funding has been cut, our essential work supporting young families can only continue because of voluntary funding."
Bad vibrations. Scaffolding has been put up on St John's Almshouse following a partial roof collapse last week. The incident on Colebrook Street closed the road and the pavement after bricks fell from the roof. Chief Executive at St John's, Clive Cook, blamed the vibration from lorries parked next to the almshouses. Mr Cook said, "We will be talking with Highways and others about how we can keep HGVs and other vehicles off the pavement outside our building." He added, "The scaffolding will be removed by the end of the week and the road and pavement reopened. It will be some time before we can commence formal repair works for various reasons. Timing is not entirely within our control. First, remedial works have to be agreed with the conservation officer, and we may need listed building consent. But we are working closely with Winchester City Council and Highways, who have been very efficient and given full cooperation."
Thank you. And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent. Goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.